it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome in to The Drive as we are an hour in, and I want to tell you here in just a bit why that's important, because today is a big day as we are trying to raise money for our kids' readathon. And again, as I told you to start the show, Clint, if you are donating in this time frame during the afternoon drive, during our show, The Drive, Phillips 66 will match up to $25,000. Again, what you do and how you're able to donate is to text new books, N-E-W. First off, I didn't know Clint was a W. I didn't know you were a W, but I heard you say it twice. And you said W, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm a W. I'm not a W.
N-E-W-B-O-O-K-S. New books, all one word, no space, to 41444. That's 41444. And you can help. And what we're trying to do, 79% of Houston school children are economically disadvantaged, meaning books are a luxury their families just can't afford. And we want to be able to help these kids learn and read. And Clint Tyler, we started the 2 o'clock hour when it was handed to us. We started at 17,200. We are now in 1 hour up to $42,684.
Golly.
So
talk to them, Drive.
Let's do
family.
It, baby. Let's continue Yee. To run them up as we can do this. As Clint will tell you, man, the amount of money, whatever you can, but the amount of money that you donate can go a long way.
The Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation, y'all, works directly with the underserved elementary schools in the Houston Independent School District and Spring Branch Independent School District, as well as a plethora of other early childhood learning centers to ensure that students have the literacy resources they need to be successful. Just so you know where the donations are going, the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation is the real deal. Directly tied to the Houston Independent School District and Spring Branch Independent School District, along with other childhood learning centers around the area. So, just so you know, that's what's going down here, and we appreciate everybody that's donated so far. And like we said last time, we mentioned it, man. Let's run this thing up. Yeah.
So continue to roll with us. You guys have been amazing already. As I see another 100 just went through. These numbers are just changing right here, baby. They're rolling through. So we are trying to get to that goal, nearly halfway there, please, as we continue one day only right here on The Drive on Sports Radio 610. All right, Clint, last night, Nick Caserio, he was on with the fellas, Texans All Access, which follow us each and every night. And he spoke about a position group that I would assume – not I would assume, I would, I'm sure and certain that this is not at all how they plan for this thing to go, and that is the tight end room, Clint. And they've lost a lot of key members there, and we've only played one game. Here's Nick Caserio kind of talking about that position of the tight end room.
Fortunately, that's just part of football, so we're going through it. Other teams are going through it, so that was a strength going into the year. So we've lost some players that we felt were going to help us, but nothing we really do about it other than try to come up with a solution. We've talked about this, kind of have some of our depth off the roster, whether it's internally or if there's a player externally on another practice squad or under the roster or on the street that might be able to come in and give us some snaps. So we'll look at everything and try to do what we feel makes the most sense.
Yep. All right, Clint, listen, that tight end room – has been hit, obviously. Brevin Jordan, then Stover. Brevin Jordan's out for the year. Irv Smith Jr., he's out for the year. And we'll see about Stover. He's got a broken foot, so it's going to be some good time there with that one. Those are three of the top four, right?
Yeah, and the broken foot thing is the lower extremity is the bad thing because you can't run, you can't lift. Yep. I mean, you literally can't do anything. And so you talk about the recovery time after you are deemed to be able to walk and run again. Hell, you, I mean, from a strength to a endurance standpoint, you ain't anywhere remotely close to football shape. So that's going to take another month. So it's that Cade Stover thing's going to take a while. But I tell you, I mean, let's be honest. They went into week one with two tight ends on the roster. So we're not talking about a room that all of a sudden you need three or four guys. So the team is clearly comfortable going in with two guys. And I would argue that going in with Dalton Schultz and Harrison Barnes. Harrison Bryant, not Barnes.
Harrison Barnes, the power forward.
Yeah, he could have been.
Small forward.
He would have been a nasty tight end.
Sport athlete.
He is still in the league, man.
Is he really?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
But yeah, though, if you're comfortable going into a game with two tight ends on the active roster, and that's how your offense is going to be geared, then that's a positive given that you keep losing so many tight ends. And you know, this John Metchie trade for Harrison Bryant could end up being a monster trade, because I do think you can argue that Harrison Bryant and Dalton Schultz, just from a veteran, been around the block, played tight end for a long time, you can argue that that combination actually brings more to the table than a Cade Stover, Dalton Schultz combination does. Now, I don't think that Harrison Bryant has the physicality that Cade brought to the table, but if you're talking about just being limited from Cade Stover's played tight end for a handful of years. Like Harrison Bryant is a guy that I think from a veteran perspective jumps in and can bring some different ripples to the table here. And so I don't know. I'm not as concerned about the tight end room. Now, obviously, you're one injury away from being in serious trouble. But, like, I think that John Metchie move to bring in Harrison Bryant could end up being a monster move now that they're going to have to rely on Harrison Bryant in really every facet of the offense.
Yeah, and they've signed him to the 53-man, yes. So he is there and going to be that other tight end. I will just say, Clint, I'm going to – listen, it was not good on Sunday, and let's be honest, it hasn't been great. We tried to, at times during camp, kind of maybe push it a little bit better. We saw some good moments in some of the preseason games, but it's clearly kind of been a work in progress, the offense. But I do want to cut Nick Caley some slack there, Clint. He's a tight ends coach, so that's his expertise. And I don't know how much they were going to be involved, but I feel like there was going to be a real plan with guys like Brevin Jordan and Cade Stover to be a pretty impactful part of the offense, right? And to create matchups, to do whatever. And then to roll through and, man, what it were, half, and now you're down to one. You're down to Dalton Schultz, and now Dalton Schultz clearly has some deficiencies that you have to work around, especially when you're losing guys left and right. So I do want to – I will cut him a little slack there, Clint, because, I mean, a first-year OC, a guy that's new to this, he's probably had to shelve – a big part of maybe what the plan was with this offense when you just lose these guys. Help them. I mean, you've lost three of them before game two. And before that, like, that's a bit, I mean, to be honest, we watched Andy Reid look like he struggled after Xavier Worthy went out of the game to kind of figure it out. So I at least want to cut him some slack on the thought of, like, hey, man, you didn't just drop three of these guys in what I believe was going to be a big part of the team. We talked about it. Leading up to it. The tight ends were going to be a major part potentially of the offense.
Yeah, I'll cut him a little slack going into the second week. I can't cut him slack for what I saw. Hell, the tight ends were productive. I mean, they were there. And
yeah, not the whole thing, just
and should have been more productive. So, yeah, this week, I mean, clearly, just like, you know, I mean, for being honest, there were a couple of spans of Bobby Slowick's sophomore year where he didn't have an offensive line, he didn't have wide receivers, and so cutting those guys a little slack, showing a little grace is probably the fair thing to do. And I think with Nick Caley here, the fair thing to do is with the tight end position in general
is to show a little grace. How but like I said, I think you're going to be able to roll in there and do really anything that you want to do. I know if you look at Harrison Bryant, I believe there's this isn't something that just gets you good and worked up, but he does have an O-line background. Before being a tight end, I believe he was a tackle. And so, I mean, there is a background of technique and pass protecting and run blocking and this and that, being more physical. So you are talking about a guy that's not only a veteran, but he has what you have to have in a number two tight end, which is the ability to put your hand in the dirt, the willingness to block, the willingness to be physical. Like, you got to have that counterpunch to Dalton Schultz, and I think Harrison Bryant's going to bring it to the table. So we should be okay. And as I said, you could argue they're already clearly comfortable going in with two tight ends, which I don't like. I don't like that at all. But they clearly were okay.
Either they were comfortable, they were forced to, because Brevin Jordan would have been playing, right? Brevin Jordan would have been.
Brevin Jordan would have. But I mean, I'm just talking about going into a game. If you're going to use a lot of 12 personnel, which most offenses today do, boy, to be one injury away from taking that completely out of your playbook and handcuffing your rookie play caller is a suspect decision, especially when on the other hand you're going to get four different running backs touches early in the first half. Like that, it doesn't seem like those were great decisions, but they're clearly comfortable going in with that. And you can argue that a veteran that's been on several teams that has played the position for a while with an O-line background, you can argue that's probably a little bit more OC friendly than a young guy that hadn't played a whole hell of a lot.
By the way, the Rangers are about to win. Shout out to the text line. And if they do that, they will pull to two games back in the division.
The Astros are doing exactly what I hope they would not do, which obviously is let the division tighten up. But they're going to make the head-to-head matchups the rest of the way that they're going to make those be do or die. And they're going to make those last, what is it, Angels and A's?
Yeah.
That's who they finish up with. They're going to make those have to be sweeps in order to win. They're going to. I mean, they're making those games. They're going to make this thing so much tighter than it should be.
Yeah, they still got six left with Texas and Seattle to the rest of the way. So, yeah, that's got to be the thought of both of those teams, Seattle and Texas, is can we stay in striking distance so that the head-to-head matchup, if we win it, like we either jump them or we get tied or get close. That's got to be what their thought process is right there. Tyler, man, you ready? How you feeling right now? It's Wednesday. It's hump day. How you feeling about the Aggies? I saw them as a 6.5-point underdog going into South Bend. Beautiful campus, by the way. You feeling all right? You feeling good? You're 2-0 going into this?
Oh,
16th
yeah.
ranked team. You feeling good?
I'm feeling really good, which scares me, to be honest with you, now that I'm like evaluating these feelings and emotions within me when you ask me that question. But I'm feeling good, dude. I'm feeling almost too good to be a fan of the maroon and white.
What is it that makes you feel so good?
Are you feeling good for him?
Good.
Are you feeling good for him, Clint?
Seeing the big jump. Seeing the big jump from Marcel Reed from jump in this season, and then from first game to second game, Marcel is balling out. I think the world's about to find out who this Concepcion fella is at wide receiver, the transfer. That dude's a baller. And Mike Elko and that big old belly of his. I got a lot of faith in old Elko. I already had a lot of faith in Elko for the Texas A&M Aggies, and then I started watching this SEC Netflix show. And it wasn't no three-quarter chub, boys. Full-fledged. Full-fledged Aggies. And
robber,
the
huh?
Yes.
Mm.
Tell me why I'm wrong, Clint.
I was seriously asking because I have not watched much of any. I did watch a little bit of their game one. You guys are a lot like Arkansas. That's quarterback position I'm talking about. Is you've got a guy that could be – I mean, if he comes into his own, the dudes could be in a damn Heisman hunt.
Yeah, but, lightning in a bottle possibilities.
But you, I just don't know where to go until you see him against with A&M. Obviously, it's a top ranked defense, and hell, Arkansas's got him next week. So, or 2 weeks from then. Anyway, it's
we need to go to that game, man.
Oh, I believe I will be going. That's the Hall of Honor weekend, Chief. Yeah, because are you talking about A&M or are you talking about Notre Dame?
Aggies going up to Arkansas.
They
got
to be in Fayetteville.
Neutral site.
Who are these two wins against A&M?
UTSA.
Yeah, UTSA.
And
somebody terrible last week.
Yeah, I watched the whole game.
Was it New Mexico?
I can't remember who it was, but Notre Dame's only played once. They played at Miami, obviously, and they were in that game and could have won that game and played right along with the talent that they have in Miami. So I don't think the talent thing will be something. It will be the quarterbacks here. What is it? Lloyd Carr's grandson is a quarterback for Notre Dame.
I did not know that. Is that who that is?
Yeah, he played really well against Miami. And Notre Dame's got to be kicking themselves in that game. Like they got maybe the best running backs in the best pair of backs in college football, and they just didn't hand them the ball for some reason. And still they nearly beat Miami. We'll see what happens there. This will be a real test, a step up for A&M in terms of just
absolutely
talent they're playing.
The difference is where I was going with that quarterback comment is like the. When you have a quarterback like Reed, when you play a lesser team, and no disrespect, but when you play a lesser team, he's the best athlete on the field.
Yeah.
So it just covers it. Like, it makes the game almost unwinnable for those lesser opponents, right? When all of a sudden that speed and that physicality and the supporting cast are equal to or either lesser than, and he's playing uphill a little bit, is the athletic ability on that Lamar Jackson level to where it doesn't matter who you're on the field with, we'll see. It has the development Tyler's talking about. Does it show up when the windows are tighter, when the coverage is tighter, when the pocket is messy and dirty and chaotic? You know, that's when you find out whether Reed has really taken that next step. I don't doubt that he's developed. I don't doubt that year two in this system that he's going to be better. But to go to Notre Dame and beat Notre Dame, you're gonna have to be more than just developed. It's gonna have to be like he done come into his own.
I'd feel better about A&M, you know, if I had really seen Notre Dame kind of play with a Miami team that some people think may be the best team and the most impressive team in the country
right
thus far. So we'll see. All right, coming up, it is the first week. We've had one regular season game of the Texans. We do a little stock up, stock down each week on the Texans. Who's your stock up, stock down? We'll do that coming up next.
Tootski, come on. Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Every football season brings highs.
Yes! Rock and roll!
And lows.
Every week, though, there's no excuse for that.
Oh, no.
It's time to buy or sell.
I tell him to sell!
It's Texans Stock Up, Stock Down on the Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
I'm going to pump those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers in this racket.
Yes, they are, Matthew. This is The Drive with Sterner and Hughley live on a hump day. And as we do every Wednesday right around this time, it is time for a little Stock Up, Stock Down. And we are in it now. We are in this Texans football season. The 2025 NFL season is officially underway. Week one is in the books, and unfortunately, we know the Texans lost 14-9 week one in LA to the Rams. So stock up, stock down for these Texans after the week one L. Going to start with you, Ron, the show, Hughley. Give me your, let's get the negatives out of the way first, because there's plenty of those to choose from in this game. Your Houston Texans stock down after week one, 0-1.
Yeah, we haven't talked about this individual a lot. Some people have texted in about this individual. My stock down goes to Nick Caserio. Listen, there have been some really good things that Nick has done. A lot of the key players that has given fans a lot of confidence, he has been the reason that they're here. But, I mean, it is a catastrophe right now with what has gone on with the offensive line in his tenure here.
Quite frankly, it's bull.
You just kind of look at it right now. They've got a $12 million player that was their big free agent acquisition that they brought in. And as Clint said, he can't be on the field. And that was the big move you made. And then your line falls apart with Ed Ingram, who I thought was destined to be a backup, he gets hurt, the whole thing swings and you're moving guys all over the place. The guy you moved up in the draft to get in the second round, me and Clint were there in Kansas City, Juice Scruggs, you're looking for every reason not to get him on the field. Hell, he can play center both guard spots. You needed help at both of them, and you went away from him. Blake Fisher, like, come on. I mean, that's rough. So, not to mention all the past things that they've done with the offensive line. When it looks like, if you look at his tenure, it looks like Jarrett Patterson's the best offensive lineman he's acquired in his time here. I would say Nick Caserio, the offensive line decisions are really becoming scary right now.
The GM Nick Caserio, that is stock down for Ron the Show Hughley after week one and that loss to the Rams for the Houston Texans. Like I said, plenty of negatives, plenty of stock downs to choose from in that nightmarish loss in L.A. Clint, over to you. What is your stock down for the Texans after the L?
As bad as I want to piggyback Ron and talk about Nick Caley, another Nick, and talk about Cam Robinson and I'm going to go outside the box here a little bit, and this is more of just a you know, you knew better kind of thing. I think right now it is clear that the Jalen Petrie situation in critical moments in any kind of man coverage just cannot happen. I think the one thing this week, if we're going to really, really, you know, hammer down on what went wrong and what needs to be fixed, there's one thing defensively. And that is in clutch, in certain situations, there has to be a Kamari Lassiter inside and the Jalen Smith kid out of USC outside. There has to be better cover guys on the field in those particular situations. And so not necessarily a huge stock down. I think just a week one reminder that this is a weakness for Jalen Petrie. Look, this defense is serious. Jalen's a big part of it. But situationally, I think that's the one move that has to be made. So I think the stock down is Petrie.
I was going to pull the trigger on D'Amico and Matt Burke earlier with that. I went through the game today. I rewatched every defensive possession. Yep. 9 times they were able to get receptions to Davante Adams or Puka Nacua when he was guarded by 9 corners. And it was mostly Petrie and that's the completions. There was a Henry Toa Toa ended up one-on-one with Adams once that didn't get completed. It was, and many of those were third downs that they got completed or big plays. It was just, they played great, but that part was weird to see it happen often.
You are listening to The Drive, Sterner, Hughley, Wednesday, 3:30. It's stock up, stock down. We got the negatives out of the way. We probably could have kept going, to be honest. But now we will sift through the very limited options, I would say, for some stock ups. You know what? That might not be fair. There was some really a few really good things on the defense for the Texans. But anyway, stock up. Sticking with you, Clint Sterner, for the Houston Texans after Week One.
I'm gonna go with Nick Chubb. I mean, look, the Joe Mixon being out means Nick Chubb by default. The stock goes up. I don't know why they decided that it was going to be to make it a priority to get 4 running backs touches early in the game. I don't understand why Dare Ogunbowale is used like out of the gate to open the season in third down situations and in obvious passing situations. I have no idea. But if you look at how the running back room unfolded, right? Damian Pierce steps all over CJ's feet like just spazzing out back there. Before he ever touches the ball, drops a pass in the next to last series out in the flats that he would have been in open field with one defender out there. Didn't fare well. You look at Dare Ogunbowale, 3rd and 1, doesn't get it in between the guards. You look at Dare Ogunbowale, game on the line, fumbles after catching a ball. That running back didn't go real well. Look, I think Woody Marks is young, but, you know, he didn't hang on. He got his guy, but he went for a ride in pass protection. And I think there's one point in there where the O-line had an inside run blocked up really beautifully, where Nick Chubb, would still be running, and he bounced it outside. And so you can look at this running back room right now if you're the Texans and say, that's again, Ron, this is why I say the Nick Chubb thing is I'm dead ass serious, man. Like there's no way around him getting 20 carries this week has to happen. He has to be the bell cow for this week. And if you run his legs off, you run his legs off. But he has to be the bell cow. Nick Chubb's stock has never been higher.
Well, Clint Sterner was able to find
one.
It's been higher.
As a Texan.
Sure. Clint Sterner was able to find one. Can Ron the Show Hughley find a stock up after week one for the Houston Texans? Stock up, Ron.
Hell yeah, there are a bunch of them. I'm going to go with Henry Toa Toa. Listen, he may be the least talented of the four linebackers. You look at it, that would be inside linebackers. He may be the least talented of it when you look at the speed and athleticism of guys like E.J. Speed, who's done it before in this league, Christian Harris. Those guys combined for an 8 snaps, and a lot of it is due to the play of Henry Toa Toa. All right, he damn near knocked Puka Nacua out of the game. He is bringing the lumber every time he arrives. And Clint, you were one of the first to say it last year. There have been improvements year in and year out with Henry Toa Toa here the last couple of years. And his coverage skills, listen, I don't blame him for getting left out in the middle of the field with Devontae Adams. But, I mean, he did all right. They picked up a flag on him that I thought they were going to throw on him. But I give it to Henry Toa Toa. He has really come up. I thought his job was gone this year and he was going to be a backup guy. But he has stayed on the field. So, shout out to Henry Toa Toa. He's played really well.
That's a good one. I'm a big fan, man. He has played well. He remade his body. Which you could see in his game. And it looks like he's come back after doing that and having a hell of a year, come back in even better shape, and is definitely what D'Amico Ryans wants at that linebacker position. So, yeah, I'm with you. That's a good one, man. The stock is Mr. Dependable right there in the middle.
There it is. All right, coming up, we will let you know lineups are out. We'll let you know what the Astros are going to look like tonight. And maybe there's a move. There's a decision that Dana and Joe Espada maybe need to look at with this team going forward. We'll discuss that coming up.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, the lineup is out as this is starting to get serious now. One game lead over the Mariners, who've won 4 straight. Let me check that. The Rangers were on their way to winning the game, and they had. And let's see if they have. They're still leading right now, 5-3 in the 7th. So they could get two games back, as they're 2.5 games back right now. But the Astros, they got to pull it together. Jason Alexander getting the ball tonight, and the bullpen clearly has been used with Garcia only going into the third inning. So,
Blue Ball
came in and helped them out, but they went extras. Yeah. And so, Kimbrel pitched, Pena pitched a lot. He's probably out for today. So, they need a big start from Jason Alexander. The Astros are going up against last year's ace for the Blue Jays, Berrios. But Pena, Alvarez, and he's in left field tonight with Correa, who hit a bomb to kick things off. He is behind him at third base. Walker is batting fourth. Sanchez behind him. Myers in there. Caratini's the DH with Yiner Diaz catching, and Urias is at second base. So I guess this is a day off for Altuve.
It's your day off after that base running blunder, man.
You think this was a planned day off?
One game up in the West, you know, the goat of the franchise and their entire history, arguably your best player in any given ball game. Yeah, just go ahead and get some rest, bro. Maybe go practice your damn base running.
He's been struggling here lately himself. But so maybe this is just, hey, get a day off.
This team's acting right like they don't want October, bro.
Again, they would even still have to blow it with the wild card too. So I'm not certain on that too. But hopefully they'll pull it together. And it starts tonight. But yes, they are one game up, and this thing is getting tight down the stretch. And as I said, they are limping to the finish line. And Clint, one thing that they may need to look at now, this may happen tonight just because of the amount of pitches that Pena threw. But this Pena thing, this is getting serious. Now, we talked about it. I mean, I told you, I said this in the pregame. I'm not. What did I say, Pena? Brian Abreu, excuse me. I didn't talk about no catch.
It says Pena in the it deal. Does. I'm like, what? What? Yeah. I mean, what am I missing? Because I didn't watch all the game last night, so I'm thinking, damn, did we got a Pena on the bump too?
Abreu, excuse me. I don't know why. Brian Pena, a former catcher in the big leagues that I've been rolling.
You wasn't talking about Jeremy. You used to about Brian.
Brian Abreu. I don't know how that was in there, but Brian Abreu, his last several outings are awful. Let's just be honest with you, and struggling. And everybody's not a closer. The ninth inning is not easy for everybody, and he has struggled. And if you look at it, Clint, his last four outings have been awful. He on August 28th, Tyler, his ERA was 1.47, the best that it had been all season. It now today is at 2.49. 2.49 on September 9th. It jumped that much, 1.47 to 2.49. And if you look at it in his last four outings, Clint, he is gone 3 2/3, given up 10 hits, given up 8 earned. And that just can't happen as a closer. And you said it, that Sean Pendergast tweeted this out. I was thinking this yesterday during that game. They may need to switch and put Craig Kimbrell. That is a hard one for me. Craig Kimbrell. They may need to put Kimbrell in the ninth inning and put Brian Abreu back in his setup role, because he seems to be struggling in the ninth inning. And yeah, it seems like when someone gets on, it then gets in his head. And everybody, as I said, everybody can't pitch the ninth. Those last three outs are difficult to get out for some guys, and mindsets are a big key to that. And Kimbrell has pitched in the ninth most of his career. I think that's got to be something they look at seriously, because this is getting rough with Payne, with Abreu.
To have Kimbrell as an option, I think, is big. I mean, what is he? I mean, he's five or six outings with the Astros, and he's given up, I think, four hits. And so he hadn't given up an earned run yet. And so, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I hope like hell it's not, though. I mean, Brian Abreu was just so promising early on, and really has been, other than of late, in that closer role. He had been you just watch him, you're like, man, he's built for this, and this could potentially be the future after, obviously, Hader, whenever that comes. So I hope it's just a bad stretch of baseball, and it's not something, to your point, like it's in his head of hey, man, the game's on the line, and if I screw up, it's over. It's not, we don't have another inning to go bat and make this thing right. So, I wouldn't be opposed to seeing a change, though. I wouldn't be opposed to seeing what one of the best that could ever do it, if he can revive this, what is it, year 15 for him or something like that?
Yes.
Can he revive that and maybe catch lightning in a bottle as an Astro here in year 15? I'd be game for that.
Yeah, you got to do something here, I think. This is to me more mental than it is physical. He clearly has better stuff.
I hope not.
I'm just talking about the inning. Like, they keep going in there, and like, they're up 3-1, and as I know Tyler was frustrated, many of you were frustrated. That game they got to win that game. They have to win that game. You're up 3-1 against Toronto. That was a playoff like game. Got to get into the ninth and win that game, right? That was in the postseason. Clint, Ryan Pressly for the vast majority of the time will close the door on that, and that's something Josh Hader has done since he's been here. And you thought Pena could do the same thing, but his three out of his last four outings have multiple runs given up in his outing, and that can't happen. So that is something they desperately need to take a look at. Brian Abreu, not Pena. Brian Abreu jumping in there. By the way, from the text line, someone delusional texting in, it's weird how y'all kiss the ass of the Texans and kill the Astros when they are farmers.
What a dumbass.
Superior. And then my favorite part of this all, y'all are bunk. I didn't know. When was that still used?
I love it. I don't y'all, know. I like it. I love
y'all
it.
Y'all are bunk. Damn, that is nice.
Oh, well, you're a clown. Go back under your freaking bridge, troll.
Easy, be easy, Tyler. Just bunk is okay.
Just call it bunk. Like I see
some
it,
folks
bro.
Think, I mean, I don't mind being called
I don't.
Bunk.
I don't know if anyone has ever said, Ron.
You're bunk, man.
You well, not just that, but you kissed the ass of the Texans. I've never gotten
that's
that.
Just a lazy ass text.
Text line all coming through. Why does he keep saying Pena? I don't know. It was. I don't know.
Pena.
Yeah, just I don't know. Pena I mean, was in
got,
my mind.
You got to be in Ron to show Ugly's dome to figure that one yeah, out. I thought he was. And the bad thing was, I thought he was about Jeremy Pena because we talk about him every day. It's Brian Pena. And I ain't got Brian Pena.
Yeah, Brian Pena, former catcher.
Pena.
That's Brian Pena.
Yeah, that's a big Brian.
I don't know why I keep saying that. Don't know. Got stuck. The text line coming in, Ron. Why haven't they reached out to Presley? I was gonna say he was pretty bad, but Kimbrel was sitting on his couch. So I don't know, boy. It's they may have to. Is there?
You think he was sitting on his couch like this?
Yes, both hands, both arms. Nice, nice. Well done. Well done.
YouTube, Twitch, you could have seen it.
Well done. You could have seen it. Yeah. No. They may have to, because who knows what's going to happen by the end of the year, with an inflammation on the elbow. You never know. They've already lost two of those guys. I thought Garcia might be an option to go into the bullpen when they get into the playoffs, but that seems like that's going to be gone. Right. He's going to be shut down. Right. They're not like he. There's no way Luis Garcia is going to pitch again.
Boy,
this year, you would think coming off Tommy John, my man knew it, right? He said, come on.
Yeah,
it's over.
And just looked like his heart fell out of his chest.
Yeah, that I don't think they're going to. He wouldn't speak after the game saying that I just want to wait till I know what the injury is. So, yeah. Like that's another option that's probably gone. So I don't know. Boy, they may have to call up Ryan Presley. Who knows? Ryan may find it here.
Hell, I'm not opposed to it. I'm not opposed to it. I mean, it's been bad. There's the injuries and the struggle. It's been like Ryan's got his get back.
They gave Hector Neris a shot. Yeah, they can give Ryan a shot.
I would not be opposed to it. Now, I do wonder. I would think that Ryan's probably already got a call. He probably should have. So it makes me think that maybe Ryan said, "Nah, y'all right, kiss there a bit
Ryan,
of my ass."
Ryan ought to do what Kareem Hunt did last. Kareem Hunt, after Isaiah Pacheco broke his leg, he called Andy Reid himself. The head coach just want to let you know I'm still ready. Maybe Ryan had reached out to Jim Crane.
I didn't know that.
I'm still ready. You know what you are. Why don't you come in here? Why don't you come to the dike? I know you're around the corner. All right, what you got coming up?
Well, I can't believe that I'm here with this take and this particular player, but I got to be honest. This player being focused on a little bit more, being relied on a little bit more, will help the Texans' offense big time. And it was not in one of my three decisions that the Texans have to make in the front office to be better offensively. No, it's not. This is one player you're not going to believe it. I'll tell you who it is.